It's Football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Take the jet sweep. Now looking for wearing the tight end. Touchdown, Aztecs. Toss it. That works, too. Two more points on the board. Waring holds it in.
Takes the handoff, too. Goes to the end zone. Has it all alone. Once again to Waring. Touchdown, San Diego State.
All right, we're going to break down some tight ends here. Chad Brown with me, D-Mac. And who has been talking about Kahale? I'm saying it right.
Kahale Waring.
Who has been talking about Kahale Waring more than me? Nobody.
Nobody.
So when I got sent this clip yesterday, I was like, what? This is Trey Wingo on Trey and Mike and Golic. Golic and, like, there's the dad Golic and the kid Golic. Golic and Wingo featuring Junior Golic and Mel Kiper and Todd McShay. They're all on there. They obviously don't get paid by the word. And here's what came out.
Before we let you go, I got to ask you this one question. I'm going to throw out a name that I think could be one of the sleepers in the draft. When it's all said and done, 3 years from now, we'll remember.
Which means you got a really good story about him.
Well, also true, but I think you agree with me. Kahale Waring, the tight end.
And he stole my guy.
Who's your guy?
I told him about him a couple months. I said, Kahale Waring.
Now, Waring,
hey,
right?
At least
remember
he agreed.
That name.
Hey, at least he agreed with my scouting analysis, which he rarely does.
4 years from now, when Kahale Waring is tearing it up for the New England Patriots, just remember that name, Kahale Waring.
When did he start playing football?
Not till after his water polo days as a Golden Rover in high school.
Right.
There you go.
Okay, we're going to 10 minutes on Kahale Waring. You got the pronunciation right.
That's who the Broncos should be focused on in the third round, not Ryan Finley.
I would agree. I would completely agree.
That's who you're giving up, khaki pantsers. You know, by the way, Mike's whole khaki pants thing, he goes rounds 2 through 4. And I'm like more or less against it. But I've actually looked at round 4. I really don't care about round 4. I really don't. Like, if you want to take a quarter, to me, round 4, Chad, is just as much magic mushroom land as, you know, 5, 6. Yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, Mike's going to try to, I'm rolling my eyes about, you know, sort of conceding anything to Mike Evans. But I'm going to say rounds 2 and 3, okay? If they do draft a quarterback in round 4, I'm not going to be ballistic or upset, or he doesn't get to treat me like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
So 4, 5, and 6, they draft a quarterback. You feel as if those picks, regardless of what position they would otherwise have picked, have such a little chance of impacting the roster. It's not going to take away from the ability for them to field a good team.
I think it's just such a crapshoot once you get beyond the third round.
Gotcha.
I mean, agree, disagree?
I completely agree. I've had some fourth round teammates who could play, and I've had fourth round teammates who could not.
Yeah.
So the crapshoot element, I think, with each round, the percentage of the loss in the crapshoot gets greater and greater and greater. So at that point, if you're going to go with a guy who you hope may be your fifth DB and contribute on special teams, then maybe you pick a guy who could possibly have a chance to be your quarterback of the future.
So, if you draft, though, oh, my God. I mean, if the Broncos really did take a quarterback in the third round, second or third round, I'd lose it. Because you'd be giving up on a guy like Kahale Waring, who, you know, who is this guy, D-Mac? Why are you even talking about him? Well, you know, did a little work, dug a little deeper. I really started down this path because, you know, Zach was blowing up T.J. Hockenson so much. And I just was having the hardest time buying this guy. So I just, well, who else is there? And so I just started digging deeper into tight ends, Chad. And this guy kept coming up over and over and over again. You got to see this dude. And the fact that he was a goalie in water polo, do you know how athletic and strong you have to be to play friggin' water polo?
You don't get to touch the bottom.
I mean, are you nuts with what you have to do that sport?
It takes a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah, this guy is no fluke. He just doesn't have a ton of football, and he plays in the Mountain West where, you know, San Diego State games start at like 8:30 at night because it's 100 freaking degrees in the West Coast, and you can't play games during the day in the fall, at least the early part of the fall. So a lot of these West Coast kids, Chad, just get overlooked. But you got to check out this dude. I'm telling you. And he will be there. I believe he will be there in the third round. This, to me, is when Brian Zanders kind of put it in our ear, Julius Thomas. Really? Like, who's Julius Thomas? Right?
Right.
Nobody knew who Julius Thomas was in the beginning. No, you got to see this guy. This is that guy. This Kahele wearing guy. And they're joking around on ESPN, say, hey, we'll see him with the Patriots. Because who? The Patriots are going to go tight end, right? I mean, you got to replace Gronk to a certain degree.
At least fill that spot somehow. You can't replace Gronk with one of these guys.
You got to try to get somebody, you know, you can't replace Gronk. Gronk's, you know, unique.
Mm-hmm. But looking at Walter Football, they've got Waring at the number five spot as far as tight end rankings.
I love, what round do they project?
A solid mid-round pick.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who's going to play right away.
He will contribute right away. I don't think he can be your full-time start. He's got a lot of nuance to go
care
in the blocking
that.
Game.
I don't care.
But he can play.
A red zone, third down, that's all I care about.
6'5", 252, 36.5 vertical. That speaks red zone target to me.
Not huge separation.
But you don't need that at that spot.
No. And big guns. Not a fat dude. He's a specialist. He is a specialist. But he's not an unwilling blocker. He just hasn't played a lot of football.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mountain West Conference, too, they, you know.
Yeah, he's got.
They barely block in the Mountain West Conference.
You have to learn the nuances of correct tight end play. But just based on his size, just based on his athleticism, he has a great chance to be successful. And I've said it before. The tight end position is the one position, I think, in football where you don't have to have a tremendous amount of football background to be successful at it at the NFL level.
Now, I will give you this. If they don't specifically take Waring in the third round, I just want a guy that kind of rings these same sort of bells at frankly, Chad, any position. I just think that tight end is one of those positions they're going to have to address.
Jace Sternberger, he worked over with Lauren Landau over there at the
yes.
Sports Performance Bubble. Yeah. Texas A&M guy, saw him play against Clemson, saw him play against Alabama. Definitely a talented receiver, got a long way to go as a blocker. Mm. But he could immediately help your passing game as a receiver.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's dig into the tight ends a little deeper. Let's go through some of the top guys. Because, again, when it comes to this stuff, do you want a guy sitting on the bench as a quarterback, or do you want somebody who's going to play? This is the Drive on the Fan.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
1 week away. Well, actually, less than a week away. We'll be in day two of the draft in a week. But we're looking at tight ends. So let's go through some of the top tight ends. Why don't we start with, well, what do you know anything about Josh Oliver out of San Jose State, Chad? I'm digging a little deeper here, but if not, that's fine.
I think he's another one of those, you know, receiving tight ends who played at a small school, doesn't have the blocking skill to be a true three-down tight end in the NFL, but he's more than a capable player.
All right. That's break glass in case of emergency. And that, to me, makes no sense as we got those guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Well, why do we have Troy Fumagalli on the team? There's no difference there. Jace Sternberger, tight end, Texas A&M, 6'4", 251. You saw him here in Colorado working out? What's the Colorado connection?
Maybe he's represented by an agent who sends his guys to do their combine training with Landau Performance.
Okay.
But we did some one-on-ones with the outside linebackers and the tight ends. I had the outside linebackers. Our buddy Joel Dreesen was coaching up the tight ends over there.
Okay.
We weren't wearing pads, but Jay certainly seemed technically knowledgeable about blocking. But apparently that's a big issue for him.
He's an early entry, so why? Why did he come out early?
You know, he transferred the year before, so not a whole lot of tape on him.
He's chasing a little bit, huh?
Chasing a little bit, and again, the blocking is lacking majorly.
So maybe there's a financial situation or there's something.
School situation, something
there's
like
something,
that.
Yeah. School ain't his thing.
Yeah, he would have served himself really well to do another year.
Yeah, but it's probably like, it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's not my thing, dude.
I got to go.
Yeah, that happens. Okay, Kahale Waring, we've talked all about. Do you like Kahale Waring?
I do. The athletic background makes me feel comfortable with him. The willingness to block with such little football experience also speaks to just kind of an overall passion for the game. I think he'll be a...
I think his passion is pretty high.
Yeah.
I think his old passion bucket, as I've heard before, I think it runs pretty deep for this kid.
A lot of times when they have these, you know, basketball players, or in this case, water polo guy, right, who come out and play tight end.
I'm sure he could probably play a little basketball.
Yeah.
He's 6'5" and change and has a 36.5 vertical.
Right.
I'm sure the guy can dunk.
I'm positive he can. But with those guys, you're always concerned about, you know, do you have the willingness to go block? And what I've seen, he does.
Okay. I love him.
I know you do.
I love him. And I love Julius Thomas back in the day, too. And I think he's that type of guy. I think he can be taken. I wouldn't wait till the fourth round because that feels risky to me. Thomas was there, but I'm not sure Waring will last. Caleb Wilson. Tell me about the tight end from UCLA, 6'4". 240, little undersized, runs a 4.56, so obviously not quite enough to be fast enough to be a wide receiver, but pretty impressive for a tight end.
Yes, but he's not going to be a true Y for you. He's definitely not going to be a three-down player. A little bit more right now, I'd call him a jumbo receiver.
Okay.
You know, doesn't have quite the body feel and skill to kind of post up like Antonio Gates does. You know, Antonio just doesn't run far downfield, but he posts guys up and he uses his body. He plays a little bit more Caleb Wilson like a giant wide receiver, not a true Y. So he's going to need some good coaching to take another step and become a dominant Y at the NFL level.
Why did he work so well with Josh Rosen at UCLA?
Because he's a good player.
Okay.
He's a good player. And considering the mismatches.
But is there a style with Rosen's play that makes sense for a tight end like him?
What do you mean specifically? Like a team who gets Rosen needs to load up on tight ends? Is that what you're saying?
I just go to my head, like, what tight end works best with Joe Flacco? Is there a style of play that works better one way or the other?
No.
Because I actually do think Rosen and Flacco are, I do think their styles are somewhat similar.
Rosen doesn't have the same arm strength that Flacco has. Flacco throws such a great deep ball, but
yeah,
there's certain similarities there. I just think Wilson is a talented guy who took advantage of mismatches at the college level because he was a jumbo wide receiver, not a true Y. Already in his speed, we already talked about that, a 4.56. You know, a guy with some good length at 6'4", 240. He was able to be a mismatch for most tight ends and most safeties at the college level.
Okay, we're moving on up. And this is the one I don't get. This is the most confusing guy to me in this tight end crew, and that's Irv Smith. Why? 6'2", 242, all right strength, okay vertical. And I just always do wonder about some of these Alabama school kids. Chad, are you a product? Because, like, O.J. Howard seemed to be it. And he had one of the worst rookie years you can imagine. Now, he bounced back. It was better his second year. But this doesn't even seem like a guy who's a tight end to me. Help explain Irv Smith and the hype on Irv Smith Jr.
The production was there. I know it's Tua and talented offensive line in Alabama, and they've got great running backs. So the play action game is always going to be part of what they do. But he was extremely productive. So, yeah, would you love for him to be 6'4", 6'5"?
A 6'2 tight end?
Yeah, I know. So when you watch the tape, he does not wow you. You watch the game in person, he doesn't wow you. But then you go, wow, here's a stat sheet at the end of the game. 5 catches, 75 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 third down conversions. Wow, what a great game for this guy. But another guy who I don't think is going to be a true three-down player just because of his size, he's not going to be able to block the Von Millers of the world.
All right, and I just want to lump these two guys together because they played together at Iowa, and we've talked about them a lot. TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant. Now, when I look at it, Chad, I think Noah Fant's the better player than TJ Hockenson. Why am I wrong?
Noah Fant's got some character concerns. He's got some.
How bad are the character concerns? What are they?
I don't think they're awful because he's clearly the consensus number two tight end in the draft and is most likely going to be a top 15, top 20 pick. So they're not that bad, but that bumps him back behind Hockenson. But Hockenson will walk into the NFL as a true three-down player. And I know you dismiss tight ends and blocking, but it is so important if you want to have a strong play-action game that you have a tight end on the field who can actually block. So
but even in some of these mocks, Fant and Hockenson are, I mean, like side by side. I mean, I've seen a lot of them where they're going within two or three spots of each other.
Fant is a better athlete. Hence the numbers, almost a 40-inch vertical, a 4.50 40.
I mean, it's stunning.
At 6'4", 249, broad jump at 10.7, an amazing athlete. Blocking leaves something to be desired. Lower body strength leaves something to be desired.
Can I just say, though, I would go with Noah Fant over Hockenson. And I understand Hockenson's this, you know, pseudo-superstar already. I get it.
Hockenson is about as close as you will see to Gronk in the last couple of years coming out in the draft.
Dude, come on. Really? Really?
Because he's a true three-down player.
He's Gronk. He's as close to Gronk as you're going to get.
Yes. If we go down the list of all these other guys, most of them lack the ability to block. Most of them don't have, or if they're true good blockers, then they don't have the ability to, you know, make separation, create separation, run routes, use their body, create mismatches. Hockenson can do all of that right now. Has already done all of that. The numbers aren't as eye-popping as some of the other guys. So I think,
can't, if you're telling me he's Gronk.
No.
I said what are you telling me then?
I'm telling you he's the closest.
How close?
He's a few steps away. But he is the closest.
This is, do we take the guy at 10 or not? And when I look at Fant, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he's all right. He's better. But if you're telling me Gronk, I mean, I can't pass on Gronk. But Gronk wasn't a first-round guy either, you know.
Because of he didn't play his last year of college. He had a back injury.
Right.
So there were tremendous injury concerns, which actually played out throughout his career.
Plus, he was at like Arizona because pool parties meant more than actually being seen, apparently.
Again, I think if you go at Hockenson with the 10th pick, you have to be willing to bend your offense to make that happen. That's all. Just so you get the value for the pick.
I'm seeing a deep class, though. I'm seeing a lot of talented guys.
There's a number of guys who can come in and in week one be on the field. By week four or five, you will have certain plays for them in the passing game. Almost all these guys need a lot of time and seasoning to help you in the blocking game.
All right, good stuff, Chad. When we come back, one of the greatest stories is out of the University of Massachusetts. It is ridiculous what the Avs have stumbled on as they hope to close out the Flames. Hear one of the more remarkable stories next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
Landis Cog and McKinnon. As McCarr jumps in. Moves it and shoots. Cam McCarr. Welcome to the National Hockey League. His mom and dad are here. It's the first period of his first game in the NHL. And he scores in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Amazing.
We're joined by Coach Greg Carville from UMass. The head hockey coach there. Coach, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on with us. You know, as a kid, I actually grew up in the Boston area, and my dad played hockey at Northeastern, so I grew up with the lore of Eastern hockey and the bean pot and all that stuff. My grandfather founded the Hingham Skating Club, you know, a million years ago. So just for some perspective here, my whole life growing up, and my family is a hockey family, we never, ever thought of UMass having a hockey team. I mean, ever. So perhaps before we get into Kale specifically, how do you build such an incredible hockey program from virtually nothing? What has it taken over the years in such an absurdly rich hockey area?
Yeah, UMass is in the western part of the state, so we're a long way, or an hour and a half, 2 hours from Boston, the mecca of northeast hockey. But the beautiful thing about UMass is there's a lot of pieces there. We have, I think, the best facility in New England. We hold 8,500 people, and we packed the house numerous times this year.
Well, maybe you can take me through what must have been an unbelievable week in your life. You go from that dramatic overtime win to what must have been a devastating loss in the national finals to the Hobie Baker to watching Kale score an NHL goal. What was that like for you as his coach?
Well, it was a bit of a surreal week. As UMass hockey, they made a statement when we made the Frozen Four. It was, I'm sure people thought they would see Bigfoot before they saw UMass in the Final Four. And we tried to appreciate the time, the moment. Everything was a bit surreal. The semifinal game, we beat Denver in overtime. We had two of our top nine forwards kicked out of the game. And found a way to, we lost the lead late in the game and won in overtime. The next day, when Kale won the Hobie Baker, was one of the most special moments of my life. Mm. And I didn't win the award, but there was nobody more deserving
than
Kale. And, you know, I was so happy to be there, sitting next to his parents. And I was so, the gratitude, the feeling of fulfillment that I had for him was really one of the most special times of my life as a hockey player, a coach. And then the next night, the national championship game, we were a young team that, you know, first time in the Frozen Four, we're playing a team that was in the national championship game for the third year in a row, returning champions. We weren't ourselves. Mm-hmm. It was a lot for our group to handle, and we played a very good team.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, after the game, we're all there with Kale, with his agent, watching him sign his paperwork. It was a great moment for the whole group.
Great.
And again, that he wanted to include everybody. Really special. Another special moment for me was after the national championship game and the big press conference afterwards. He still had his jersey on, and he was asked, like, "Do you still have your jersey on?" And complete genuineness, he says, I wanted to wear it as long as I possibly could.
Oh man, you're giving me chills, Coach. Wow.
Yeah, and that's the type of kid you guys have. He's just an awesome kid, and then to see him, I was actually in the air flying my family on vacation and got off, and all the Texans, Kale scoring and the videos. And,
oh, you didn't see it live. Oh my gosh. Oh, Coach, it was unbelievable. Yeah. It was really, honestly, it's one of the more remarkable sports stories in the 30 years of me doing sports talk radio that I remember. It was that special.
Yeah. Just awesome. But I watched the second game, and I'm looking forward to tonight's game, too.
Okay. Well, thank you for giving, you know, just hockey wise, what stands out to me when I'm watching Kale, just even in highlights, I can't believe he's a defenseman. And and he certainly has enough skills to play forward in the NHL. So perhaps can you compare his unique set of skills as a defenseman and hockey-wise what he brings that's so special, and maybe somebody to compare him to as an incredible offensive defenseman?
Yep. I coached in the NHL for a long time, but I've been away from the league. So honestly, I don't think there's a comparable to him.
No kidding.
His skating ability is elite. Like, he's McDavid level skating. His hands are tremendous. The way he moves the puck, shoots the puck. The thing that you don't know yet, and you'll learn this, mm-hmm. especially as he gets older, he is physically strong.
Okay.
He hits people at our level. We call it a counter hit. When guys would go to hit him, he would actually put the shoulder into them. He put a lot of players on their butts.
Mm.
And I think he probably won't be doing that until he gets a little more comfortable. But as he continues to get stronger, you're going to see a kid that actually is going to be a high offensive player, but actually cares about playing in his own end.
Okay.
And that's not often what you see from high-end offensive defensemen, that he's responsible in his own end. He can compete. He's got tremendous reach. You'll see him use his reach to separate guys from pucks. but the physical part of his game. He'll block shots. His defensive game was something that really needed to develop. Coming out of juniors, he was all offense, and I think for the 2 years, he became a much better defensive player. He played in the World Juniors and led the team in scoring, but in the big games against the big teams, he didn't get a lot of minutes. I think they were concerned about his defensive play, and okay. That kid, a year later, is playing in the NHL playoffs and does just fine in his own zone.
Coach, congratulations on, I think it's a great lesson for everybody listening and parents and kids. And I do like the fact that college is at least some sort of alternative, right? That you can get a couple years of school under your belt. Because I do see these kids at 18, 19 years old, and I don't think they're really ready to just even live life. You know, my kid's 19. I don't trust him completely. You know, he's off at college and everything. By the way, he's at college at Arizona State. How about Arizona State having a really good hockey team? How about that? It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So
it's great to see.
Just congratulations, Coach. And I hope you enjoy. I hope we all enjoy the process. And I hope Cale Makar becomes an Avalanche legend and is here for 15, 18 years, however long you can strap up the skates. And thanks for doing such a great job with them.
Yeah, take care of our boy for us.
We will. Thank you, Coach.
All right.
That's Greg Carville. What a story that is. Just amazing. In fact, we did record that interview, so we have a lot more with Coach Carville, and you can find that at 1043thefan.com. John Gruden and Mike Mayock are doing something really smart, but it isn't seen very often. Details why the Broncos should do this next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, feedback. It's Nirvana. I'm helping. I'm sure Kurt would put this right here, Dave.
I don't think that's helping.
Okay.
Dave Grohl.
Okay, how about this story? I love this story. I'm sorry. that's on me. Let's think about this philosophically a little bit, Chad. Raiders coach John Gruden, GM Mike Mayock, sent their scouts home for the weekend. And they're not expected to return by draft time. John Elway is addressing the local media on Monday. We'll carry that at noon, high noon on Monday, right here on The Fan. But let's think about this for a second. Per Ian Rappaport, they're sending all the scouts away. Why? Their belief is they don't want to let the word leak out, and they don't exactly know who to trust. So the decision on the draft at the end of the day is going to be between John Gruden and Mike Mayock.
Two guys who are on TV.
Two guys who are on TV.
Kicked all the pro scouts out.
So they're taking all the input. They're going through the process.
Right.
But they're not making any final decisions in front of anybody else except for the two of them.
Spider 2Y banana.
Thank you, John. What do you think of that?
If you've got a mole in this draft process, that's a significant issue, whether it's a mole to the media or a mole to another team. And if you don't know who on in your scouting department to trust, this makes sense. We'll figure out who the mole is after the draft, but we are certainly not going to allow this mole to kill this draft for us. It makes sense to me. I got no issue with it.
I can't believe more teams haven't done this in the past. This makes so much absurd sense to me.
I did read a story today about a longtime GM who was commenting about this story, saying they purposely had a misinformation conversation with several scouts.
to see who the mole was?
To see who the mole was.
That's hysterical.
And then, like, a day later, it showed up in a reporter's column about who they were interested in, and they instantly found out who the mole was.
Wow. No way.
They set the mole up.
Wow. That's crazy.
And that solved that problem for that team.
Did the guy get fired?
Yeah.
Whew. That is something.
It's amazing how many people just want to tell the story and have loose lips. You can't be in this situation. In that role, you just simply can't. I know Mike Kliss is a cool guy. But you can't be sending Mike Kliss texts on the side. We'll find out.
Well, that's really interesting. I didn't know that edge of the story, but that's really interesting. Where I was kind of grooving on this story from the get-go is... Well, first of all, who do you think really is making the decisions over there and, over there in Bronco land?
Oh, welcome to Bronco land.
In Bronco land?
Yeah.
As far as the draft?
Yeah.
It's John Elway.
Anybody else?
They may have Elway's ear, but they're not making the decision.
Mm.
John, who
shouldn't
do you
want? It be?
Who do you want, John? Who do you like here, John?
Shouldn't it be John and... Fangio? I mean, isn't that the way it should be?
It should be, yes. Ideally, I think...
Not John and Matt Russell and Fangio and Patrick Smythe and Greek and Donatell and Scangarello.
No.
Elway? Fangio?
Yes. They are working in concert together to make this decision together. Now, the arrangement that they have where John picks the groceries and Fangio keeps his head down and coaches the guys, that's not an unusual arrangement in NFL football. But if we're going to draw up the ideal situation, I would love for my GM and for my head coach, if I'm an owner,
yeah,
to work collaboratively in this process.
Right. Because why? What groceries? What am I supposed to make with this meal?
Right. And I need to like this guy. Maybe I've got a contact somewhere along the way who... one guy who coached with me 2 years ago who was at the college where this kid was at. There's all kinds of situations where the head coach's input is going to be important, not just on the background of the player, but also just the fit for the particular defense, what I envision this role to be for this guy, all of that counts.
Now, the Raiders are definitely in a unique circumstance because they have 3 first-round picks. So perhaps they are more susceptible to, wandering ears.
Well, if you're... there's 3 times as likely for that information to get out about who they're interested in.
Yeah.
Because there's three right. spots for them.
Huge picks. Huge decisions to make.
Yeah. They got to rebuild that thing out there.
I do like it, though. I keep going back, and we were talking to Pedro Gomez earlier today, and one of the things is, the time... When you pay a lot of money for a player, like we've got the situation with Ian Desmond in Colorado where, you paid him a ton of cash. You just can't send him down, So anytime you put a guy making $14 million a year, Chad, on the bench, man, that is just, you just cannot randomly do that if you're the manager, if you're Bud Black or if you're the coach.
That's too bad. I think.
Hold on. If you tell me you can do it, fine. But I'm saying there's just so much invested in this guy. The decision goes over the coach's head. It should, at least.
Right. Well, I don't think it should. I think the coach gets to pick who plays.
And
It is rife for issues.
I don't know.
Wait. So the management gets to pick who plays?
Well, hopefully it's the manager and the coach and the management. Hopefully together, like this particular scenario.
Ideally.
No, I don't think the coach should randomly just be able to say you play and you don't. I think what Gary Kubiak did with Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian in that final game of the year, when he said all week and they were out of the playoffs, we'll split the game, and he didn't play Paxton Lynch when they were up 24 points in the second half, I thought that was the most insulting thing in the world.
I will agree with you in that circumstance. A coach should be able to, or should have the foresight to look at the situation and see, we got to look till next year and see what this guy can do. That's a whole different deal than management insisting this is going to be the second cornerback for this team. I know none of the coaches like him. I know he's pissed off the entire defensive staff.
All right, but that's a little different than the high-priced, high-profile dudes. That's if we're going there, sure, I'll give the coach you know, wiggle room on that sort of thing. I'm talking, okay, football perspective. You drafted Drew Luck.
Okay.
When he starts playing, better be agreed about management and the coach. And there better be some sort of time frame where that's happening.
There should be a plan in place immediately and discussion had about how we're going to implement this guy and how we're going to insert him into the lineup. Absolutely. Absolutely should be a plan for that. It's the 10th pick in the draft. It's a quarterback. It's the face of your franchise. That needs to be discussed throughout the organization, what the plan is going to be there. I'm just not a fan of management poking its head into a staff meeting and saying who's going to play.
It's awesome where the Avalanche are right now, right?
It's great.
Isn't it exciting?
It's super exciting.
And tonight they're going to close things out, right? It's going to be awesome. It's Cale Makar.
Landis Cogan McKinnon. As Makar jumps in. Moves it and shoots it. Cale Makar.
Do you remember what happened, though, when the Avalanche had their worst season ever? Right before the season? Patrick Waugh.
Yeah.
Stepped out on Joe Sakic.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the slimiest, low-rent, cowardly decisions I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I can ever really forgive Patrick Waugh for doing that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because essentially he just didn't like the direction the team was going with their personnel. That means that for whatever reason, he and Joe Sakic and whoever else just weren't on the same page.
True.
So, if that's the case, step off. Don't take it all the way to like a week before training camp opens up. You know way ahead of time whether this is happening or not.
Ideally, yes.
I can't get over, I could not get over Kubiak, what he did with Paxton Lynch. And I just cannot believe, I couldn't believe he maintained a friendship with John Elway. I could not get over that.
That's a tough one for me. That's a tough, I'm with you. It would be, if I were John, I would feel, hey man, is this about you? What's the day about you? Or what's the day about the Broncos? It's always going to be the Broncos, right?
I just, you know, I guess on that one, Gary is just who Gary is. Like, that's who he is. He probably always has been. I just could not understand how that was acceptable for Elway to sit through. I'll never understand it. I'll never, ever understand it.
Now, I don't think it would have been wise for Elway to run down at halftime.
He did go down at halftime.
And have some kind of animated conversation.
Well, he did go down at halftime.
Uh-huh.
He did go down at halftime. And the story is, he went down there. Gary explained to him what he was going to do and keep playing Trevor because they wanted to win. They were up like 17-0 at the time, by the way, in a totally meaningless game.
Right.
And in some, like Elway said, that's okay.
Do we have a plan or do we not have a plan?
Right.
If we have a plan, then we're going to stick to the plan because we came up with a plan.
Right.
That's the whole point of planning.
So now you got, it doesn't work. So the reason why this Mayock Gruden story to me makes sense is this is the relationship it should be. Like Thomas Dimitrioff and Dan Quinn with the Falcons, Chad, man, they were tight. Mm-hmm. They were tight.
Still are. They added Scott Pioli in the mix, another person. So it's three guys.
This is why, like, of course Hugh Jackson got fired. What in the world was Hugh Jackson thinking? Seriously, Chad, what in the world was Hugh Jackson thinking?
I can't even pretend to guess that. Tyrod Taylor over Baker Mayfield.
I mean, maybe if you want to send some sort of symbolic message for the first week of training camp, you know, some like, hey, rookie, you got to pick up the helmets or I don't know, some sort of phony baloney moment. But after about 7 days in camp, okay, here we go. Hey, you know, you have to prep, you know, press. Baker Mayfield's our new QB1. He just really had a spectacular 3 days. We really love Tyrod and everything, but, you know, Baker's just earned the right. You know, any questions? No? Okay, see you later. You keep your job.
Right.
What was Hugh Jackson thinking?
I actually don't think John Dorsey was going to let him keep his job. No
well,
what.
Maybe not. But, I mean, he had a shot to keep his job.
He was 1-31. I couldn't believe he got a chance to come back for year three.
Dorsey kind of needed to get his feet under him. But, yeah. I mean, you know, Hugh Jackson had gone through the process. He had a shot to keep his job. Yes. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life.
It was pretty dumb.
KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. So when I see what Patrick Waugh did, that to me is despicable. And I'm so glad. And that Avalanche season was, I mean, they hired Jared Bednar at the last second. And, dude, that was tough.
But how come the door doesn't swing both ways? Why does Waugh, in your scenario, get all the blame and management gets escape free? Don't they have a responsibility to have a relationship with a coach that works?
Yeah, I don't think it was that outrageous, though. I mean, I don't think, have you ever talked to Joe Sakic? He's not exactly, you know, some sort of taskmaster that's ridiculous. He's a pretty mellow, solid guy.
You can be a mellow, solid guy and be sincerely wrong at the same time.
Okay.
They're not exclusive.
I mean, these are two dudes that have known each one Stanley Cups together, been teammates for years. I mean, you know, Joe hired Patrick. I don't know. It seems to me that this is the type of guy. I think this is on Patrick in this particular circumstance. I know what you're saying, but I think this particular circumstance is on Patrick.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not tied into it. I don't have intimate knowledge of what happened behind the scenes. But typically, it takes two to tango, and it takes two to break up a relationship, particularly in football relationships. You think Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones don't just kick themselves the fact that they didn't win three more Super Bowls because egos got in the way and both of them are to blame? Yeah, they do.
Right.
Yes.
Ridiculous, right?
Right.
Should be Elway and Fangio.
It should be.
Yeah, not Elway and Matt Russell whispering in his ear and all that sort of stuff.
I'm okay with that. I need Fangio to have a seat at the table.
Oh, man. I mean, at some point, it's just got to be the real thing. At some point, it's got to be you two guys together. You can't just have your minions with you when you're trying to do this stuff, Chad. No way.
If it's a football thing, I don't see John Elway without Matt Russell right next to him. So I'd have to think to have just Elway in the room without Matt Russell, it doesn't work as well. They are tied at the hip for a reason.
Then who's Fangio?
He's the head coach. And in my team that I own in this fictitious
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I'm interrupting. Go ahead.
That's fine. Then my GM and my head coach are both at the table. And if my GM has an incredibly close relationship with his assistant, then and they work better together, then that's fine. The assistant can be there. But my head coach is going to be at the table.
This is the issue I see, okay? Uh-huh. So here we are. We're sitting down. We got to make some decisions on what we're going to do, right? And there's a lot of people. It's just not. Although in this case, with Gruden and Mayock, it really is just the two of them. And we got to decide what we're doing.
I'd be so fascinated to see what the picture of the Raiders war room looks like. Is it literally just going to be two dudes at a big giant table
with
24 chairs?
Well, let me tell you, I don't know what would be wrong with that. I think that would be okay, by the way.
Mark Davis with his terrible haircut. I mean, who else is going to be in the room?
You know, ideally what I would see is one room where it's, you know, it's packed. And then there's the sub-war room. Because you do have to have guys in there because the phone rings and you got agents and you got this and you got that. I mean, you just literally can't do just two dudes. Oh, that would be great.
It'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome. You just see Gruden and Mayock in a room by themselves.
Yes, and all those empty chairs, the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. That's hysterical. Yeah, they would. And they shoot it. They still stay in the same huge room with 24 empty chairs.
You can picture it.
Well, they're inviting them back, apparently, for the draft. But they're really kicking them out.
Yeah.
They're kicking out their scouts. But let me just go here. What is the dynamic between it's Elway and Fangio? What are we doing? And now it's Elway, Russell, Fangio. What are we doing?
If I'm the owner, that's not how it's going to work.
If you're the who?
If I'm the owner, that's
the
not
who?
The owner.
Of who? The Broncos?
Of any team.
Well, let's just say the Broncos. Who would that be?
Then I want two opinions. in this scenario, John and Matt can have the conversations, but it's one opinion coming out of that. And it's one opinion coming from my head coach. Just because Matt's in the room does not mean there's an equal standing with all three of them in this scenario.
I just see a scenario where it's like, who's breaking the tie? Like, who is really, you know, like, going to figure things out? And I just think it's too easy for John, reasonably, and Matt to kind of just do it on their own. That's it. And you know what? There's nothing necessarily wrong with that.
It's not.
Okay?
Teams operate with this structure all the time.
They do. But this is where you just kind of emasculate your coach, and he really is just, you know, cooking the dinner and you brought home the groceries, whatever that is. And you know what? Maybe that's okay. Because you hired a, you know, grandpa who's walking around in his gray sweats, like where is the shape of the body? Nobody's really quite clear. I do have pockets, including a snazzy back pocket. And he doesn't really have all that much of a life. You know, I did find he is getting a piece of properties, like out of the hotel finally.
Oh, good.
But he was in that hotel, Chad, for a long time. But he's got himself a nice little, you know, he's got a spot. But if you're just, I don't know, man. I saw VJ for 2 years. Just he looked so bewildered on the sidelines sometimes. It's just like he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know who the guys were, what they were doing. He didn't seem to know a damn thing. He looked just lost for 2 years. And I kept hearing about how he was talking with John, and I just never bought it. I just never bought that there was any kind of good communication. I think, especially in that 2017 draft, how awful was that?
Bad.
You know, it was beyond miserable. Like, what exactly was VJ supposed to do with that?
Any coach.
Right.
Vince Lombardi, what's he supposed to do with that?
I want it to be different. I'm hoping it's different.
I think it will be. I think Fangio just walks in with a little bit more respect in this situation. But I think in the end, it's still going to be John's selection.
I want to play you some Michael Malone from last night. Now, Derek White,
comma,
Colorado kid.
There we go.
Comma. Had a great day.
Fantastic.
This is Michael Malone after the game.
There's no doubt in my mind that Derek White, the last couple of days, has been reminded about Jamal Murray's fourth quarter performance. Derek White came out like he hadn't eaten in 2 days. He came out hungry. He came out pissed off. And he sent a very loud and clear message. Now, I'm anxious to see our guys. How do we respond to that? Where's your pride? You know, where's your toughness? Where's your grit? So game four is going to be really like a great insight into who we are as a team, especially our young players, especially Jamal Murray. Great fourth quarter. We win the game in game two. Well, he's going to learn as a young kid, it can't be just one quarter. It's got to be every night.
That's a dude in charge right there, right?
Sounds like it. No doubt about it. And I think the harsh words he's given to his team is Jamal Murray is well warranted. Outside of 7 minutes in the fourth quarter of one game, you've been outplayed this series.
Do you think those comments are supported by Tim Conley, the general manager of the Nuggets?
I would hope so.
I think so, yes. Okay. Do you think Josh Kroenke, who runs the Nuggets, supports those comments as well?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
I think all three of those guys are on the same page, which is what you want.
Yes.
Coach, GM, owner or head of the franchise acting.
Josh runs as the owner. He's the owner.
Okay. Oh, you want all three of those guys on the same page?
He owns enough.
Yeah.
As far as everybody concerned and connected to the team, he's the owner.
Whenever one of those pieces is not fulfilling its role, it's an issue.
Stan is very busy with shin guards and Arsenal right now, so Josh is doing his deal.
Mm-hmm. You need all three those pieces working together.
Yeah, that to me is a powerful message. Because that's the blue arrow right there.
But how about these teams where you find out 3 years down the road, oh, we didn't want to take this quarterback, but the owner made us.
I know.
Can you imagine
a situation? Dan Snyder, Mike Shanahan. It's a disaster.
Haslin.
Just jumping in left and right about all sorts of crap.
I can't.
Ralph Wilson with Rob Johnson over Doug Flutie.
Yes.
Back in the day. Wade Phillips said, yeah, he was forced to play Johnson instead of Flutie in the Mile High, the Music City Miracle.
I know it has to be humbling for some of these owners. You're the billionaire. You own the team. But just because you own the team does not make you a football scouting expert. And we've seen, you know, Jerry Jones hit and miss so frequently as the head football person there in Dallas. It's leave it to the pros is what I would say, Mr. Owner.
I think we're getting to the basis of the issues with the Broncos for the past couple of years, by the way. I think this has essentially been the problem.
Yeah.
And
we've talked about it a number of times.
Every time we're critical of it, people are always like, oh, so you want to fire John Elway. It's not as simple as that. It is a funny thing that when you're evaluated, like how you're doing, just think about your job. You're driving around out there. Think about your job. How long can you more or less fail in your job? Like, what is... So, if you were the salesman of the year, Chad, in 2012 through 2016...
Had a good run.
You had a good run. You're salesman of the year. And then in 16, you kind of drop off. You're all right. But, boy, in 17 and 18, it was hard getting out of the house. I mean, you just... It just didn't really, you know, I mean, come on. We weren't really even trying that hard. I mean, you may make appearances at meetings and make excuses for everything, but, you know, it's a series of miserable decisions on your part in terms of sales.
You're going Nicolas Cage leaving Las Vegas?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You had some moments at a pool with Sheryl Crow. I don't even know who was in that movie.
Elizabeth Shue.
Close enough.
Okay.
You keep that job?
No, you don't keep that job.
There's no way. But hey, Chad, what about my four Salesman of the Year awards?
I can't pay you for your past performance. I pay you and employ you for your future performance. I'm very appreciative of what you've done in the past, but I have to look into the future. And based on these last 2 years, we've gone nowhere but downhill. It's about future performance.
Now...
I paid you already for those past performances.
I think it's reasonable to say, though, your boss may come to you and say, I'm giving you another chance, right?
Well, because you did because, have those four Salesman of the Year awards, and that was fantastic. So I'm going to give you a little bit more rope here.
I mean, isn't Flacco just like that as a player right now?
Yeah. Yes. Based on what he did last year, you know, getting beat out. To a rookie, but injury was had a role in that, but hasn't been a truly elite quarterback outside of a playoff run. Yeah, he's living off that playoff run in some ways and given the benefit of the doubt because of that.
So Elway has survived. And part of this, of course, the ownership situation. Look at the Avs, okay? Come, Avs and Nuggets. How can you not give Josh Kroenke just a huge tip of the hat? I mean, way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to stick through some obviously rough times, make some tough decisions, go through all sorts. And then they had to stick with people. They had to say, listen, we believe in you. Like when Michael Malone talks about just the other night saying, you know, I stuck with Jamal Murray because I had to prove to him that, you know, I was behind him, that sort of thing. You know, you have to weather some tough times. So I'm actually okay, you know, with the Broncos, with Elway saying, okay, we believe in you. You know, we trust you, you know, but there's got to be a level of measurable success that goes beyond what you once did at some point. And I just think we're kind of there right now, to be honest with you, with the Broncos.
You get called to your boss's office.
Yeah.
A little bit of nerves in your body.
Always. I'm not that good.
John Elway gets called into Joe Ellis's office. Is he nervous walking into that office? As opposed to, you're walking into the owner's office. It's a little different feeling, isn't it?
Is John walking into Joe's office or is Joe walking into John's office?
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And I don't know how it flows and works over there, but the lack of an ownership figure, you need those three pieces in place. There's a reason why those franchises are successful.
I guess you should be a little bit nervous.
And I think when the GM or the head coach walks into that owner's office, there's some nerves that come with that. And there's some expectation. There's some self-reflection of what have I done well? What haven't I done well? And without that person on top, You're not forced to evaluate yourself in that way. Mm. And that's when you make dumb decisions.
Yeah, I think, like, this is why sometimes it feels like I should never ask a player about anything when it has to do with the team. Because what is a player supposed to do with all this?
They can't do it. What are they supposed to say?
What are they even supposed to know about all this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, who cares?
Do you like the draft pick?
You know, I am always amazed.
Hey, Ron, what do you think?
I am constantly amazed. Like, Joe Flacco said this the other day. Richie, if we could find it, when Joe Flacco's talking about he doesn't care about the draft. I am constantly amazed when players say, oh, yeah, I don't care about the draft. I don't worry about the draft. I don't think about the draft. It's not that you have to be crazily paranoid about your own position, but don't you have a general curiosity about what's going on with your team? Like, do you not understand how this is going to impact everybody else? How are you not into the draft if you're a player?
It's mind-blowing to me. They're trying your replacement.
Were you into the draft when you were playing?
From two perspectives. I wanted to see how they were going to improve our team, and then I also wanted to measure up our scouting and GM and compare them to other teams.
Weren't you just curious as an employee, like, how are we doing?
Yeah, and linebacker is a position where they bring in a new linebacker every single year, whether it's first round or, you know, sixth or seventh round back when I played. They're bringing in, hopefully, somebody they want to replace me with. I should know about the situation.
Here is Joe Flacco on this.
Well, yeah, like I said, I don't really care about whether they take a quarterback or not, whether it's 10 or whatnot. The only thing I care about is, like I said, I want this team to be as good as they can with me at quarterback. So if we feel like as a team, as an organization, we can add value to our team with a 10th pick, well, then I'm all for getting a guy that can add value to the team with me as the understood quarterback. But hey, it is what it is, man.
Yeah, I want to find the one where he's talking about just like, I don't care about the draft. Those quotes are classic. I just don't care about the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. I don't know. Go ahead. You got it. Joe, what are you going to do on draft night?
I'm honestly probably going to be on a flight back to Philadelphia during that Thursday night. I think I land at like 10:30 or so. So I really don't pay too much attention to the draft. You know, you never know who's going to trade up, who's going to get picked where, and how things are going to kind of fall into place. So I'm just kind of a fan at that point.
Okay, you can take a flight whenever you want. I mean, you know, I don't care about that. But the concept that you don't care what's going on is ridiculous. First of all, I think it's just a lie.
I think you should, at the very least, even if you don't, you should say that you are. You're the face of the franchise. You're the quarterback of this team. Of course you care about this.
You know, we had a really cool event today. We were at the Denver Rescue Mission at the Crossing, and we just there's a group of us from the company, not just the fan, but the company Bonneville itself. And we were just serving lunch, that sort of thing, which was really enjoyable. Just a real fun afternoon. Proud of our company. And there were several female employees of the company that were there, and they're all Broncos fans. They were wearing Wacko for Flacco t-shirts. And I said to them, they were asking me about the quarterback and the Broncos and some stuff. And I said to them, hey, do you guys know that Joe Flacco has 5 kids under the age of 6 and none of them are twins? And they didn't know that. A couple did, but a couple didn't. And they're like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, no. And they're like, holy cow. You know, and then instantly they're just, it's a different mind. The male and female minds just work differently in this sort of the area. And they said, well, what's he doing? And I go, well, they're not here. He's out here and they're back. And they go, a couple of the women go, well, of course. And they go, I swear I didn't bait them this. They go, well, they got to see what's going on. Like if it's worth coming out here at all. So instantly, without really much pushing them down that road from at least these women's perspective, they think about like, well, what is the level of commitment here?
Right. How long is this going to happen? What do we do? Do I take my kids out of school where they love going to school?
Yeah. Well, and first of all, the school thing is hysterical because, you know, the kids are, the oldest they could possibly be is first grade.
Right.
Who cares? Getting out of school. I mean, give me a break. It's not much of a thing.
As someone who moved his kids around, I think it's important.
I would think it's important, too, if they were in real school. unless we're about to have some sort of debate on the merits of real school in kindergarten and first grade. And you're going to lose that argument.
Okay. Touche.
I mean, they got it like that. So this draft here, Chad, I mean, it is just absolutely gargantuan, and I'm not sure what direction it's really going to go. I really don't, because everything they do has a significant impact on deeper things down the line. If they draft a quarterback at 10, and there's reasonable ways to explain it, I don't know what we're going to get out of Joe Flacco. And if John Elway and Vic Fangio are not on the same page about that, that is going to put Vic Fangio in a preposterous position as a head coach.
That's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a tough one. You bring this guy in, I'd imagine those questions were asked about them, their plans for other quarterbacks, drafting quarterbacks, when they were meeting with Joe Flacco. Yeah. And then how does Joe Flacco just be a pro and do your job when your replacement is sitting right over there? And you just did this last year. You can be the good soldier once, but can you have it? Can you do it again and be the team guy again? That's hard to do. One time, okay, fine. You brought a player in, didn't work out. I got nicked up. He played well. You changed the style of the offense. It was too difficult to go back to me. I understand that. But here, you brought me in.
Yeah.
And you sold me a bill of goods. That's not correct. It's not accurate. It wasn't your real plans. I would be upset. Not from a competition standpoint, but I'd be upset because you lied to me. You deceived me to get me here. And now how am I supposed to work with you guys?
I don't know how it happens. So this is what we're looking at here. And this is the real reason. I mean, ultimately, Chad, in my opinion, this is the real reason why drafting a quarterback at 10 just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. To me, it doesn't make any sense. Last year made so much sense.
All the sense in the world.
And I think that's just been just absurdly proven out based on where you are now. And I think it's further proven out when you look at the quality of edge rushers in this draft. It's ridiculous.
Lots of them.
You're going to get a guy like Rashawn Gary who's going to maybe fall, you know, in the you know, 11 through 19 or something. This dude is ridiculous. You're going to have Montez Sweat maybe kind of fall down a little bit, perhaps. Mm-hmm. It's going to, I mean, the possibilities for the Broncos in terms of edge rushers in this particular draft, no matter where they finished last year, were through the roof.
No doubt. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
We wouldn't be talking about, talk about the easiest draft in the world, by the way. If we had done the right thing and you didn't draft Bradley Chubb, but you did draft, you moved up, God forbid, you actually do something aggressive. You moved up and you got who you wanted, Sam Darnold. Or, hey, let's just say you took Josh Allen. I know Josh Allen is already a bust. He's not, by the way, and wait and see on that one. Or Josh Rosen or whoever.
I count, well, at least on this McShay Kuiper draft that we got in front of us from today, 8 edge guys in the first round.
It's absurd.
8.
It just is deep this year. It wasn't last year.
Right.
And that is not to say Bradley Chubb isn't fantastic. He is fantastic.
But you had a chance because you had the 5th pick in the draft to get your possible quarterback of the future.
Correct. And if this, we would have got rid of Case Keenum. Keenum would have been sat down at some point during the season, because it was, I mean, they were 3-6, everybody. You don't think Case Keenum would have been sat down at 3-6 for Sam Darnold or Josh Allen at 3-6? Come on, Chad.
Right.
That's the time you put that guy in, right?
Exactly.
It's the perfect time. Going on the road to Cincinnati, who cares? Season's more or less over anyway, which it was. And now you've got that under your belt, and here we go. And we're not asking questions about quarterbacks. Not only are we not asking questions about quarterbacks, we're doing mock drafts for the Broncos. It's just edge rushers. All we would be talking about is edge rushers, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we would have lost Shaquille Barrett, and Shane Ray would be gone. And all we would be talking about is edge rusher, edge rusher, edge rusher. Who are we going to team up with, Vaughn?
And we'd be so excited because no matter how the first 9 picks went, there'd be a more than qualified guy waiting at the 10th pick.
We'd be pumped.
Yep.
It would be the equivalent of take any of the edge, take the best edge rusher available.
Right.
That's all we would be talking about.
Mm-hmm. didn't happen.
But when you have a GM and a coach and you're not on the same page and you don't really have a plan and you just, oh, but Bradley Chubb's there. What do we do? What do we, hey, Matt, everybody, scout this guy, that guy, the other guy. Is VJ even in the room? Bradley Chubb. What did we just do? What just happened here? We got Bradley Chubb, everybody. Everybody, we got Bradley. We're awesome. We got Bradley Chubb.
Who later became known as Chubby.
Second round. ESPN.com says Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton. Auto draft. That's auto draft to me.
Right.
That's what they did. You're fine in auto drafts, theoretically, Chad, because you're just picking out great players. You really are. BPA, best player available. You're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not fulfilling any kind of plan whatsoever. Because what is the plan? So if they draft a quarter, I mean, if they draft a quarterback, I'll be beside myself and laugh if they draft a quarterback at 10. And if they draft a quarterback in the third round, I'll be catatonic. Other than that, I can't wait till draft night. This is The Drive.